championship on the line right here. He's going for the corner. He's got it.
Hello and welcome to 4th and 5, your Longhorn Nation podcast. I'm your host, Will Bazer, and I'm joined alongside by Joe Cook, as always. You guys are listening to the Hornscast channel. It's the Hornscast channel you can find on any podcasting platform. Today we have a packed show for you with two big interviews. The first one from CBS Sports' very own Dennis Dodd to get the national media's view on the Longhorns as they head into the 2019 season this weekend. And then previewing this matchup against the Louisiana Tech Bulldogs with Corey Diaz, who covers them for the Monroe New Star and Shreveport Times. So no fluff, let's get right into it. Now we are joined by CBS's national college football columnist and St. Louis Blues fan, Dennis Dodd. Dennis, how are you doing on the first week of college football's 150th season?
I am great, and every day with the Stanley Cup is even greater. So I am doing fantastic.
I think I've said on Twitter earlier, I was like, I have never been this ready as, you know, a follower of the Longhorns to be stabbed in the heart by a season. And I was like, no way. I guess there was that one time earlier this summer. But I also promised Joe that I would save the St. Louis Blues questions for later in the show. So, because, you know, we have a bunch of Dallas listeners here and they're not too happy about that, aren't they?
I am honored you would even have St. Louis Blues questions. So that's great. Yeah.
So let's go ahead and start off with some big national college football questions for the national college football writer. In his last press conference, Tom Herman talked about the idea of standardizing the practice of scheduling 9 conference football games each year for every single conference in the FBS. What are your thoughts on that, and is it doable?
Yeah, I get that. I get they're wanting to be a uniform conference game scheduling format, but it's not going to happen. You know, for the same reason the SEC starts their games, their big game at 3:30 Eastern time, or the Big Ten has its own network, or you have to understand, think of these conferences as 10 little fiefdoms, their own little kingdoms, where they can do whatever they want. There are general laws you have to obey by the NCAA. But why, if you're the SEC, for example, would you ever want to play 9 games? 12 of the last 13 national championships have been won by teams from the South. The SEC won 7 of those in a row. They've won 9 of the last 13. Well, why would you put yourself out there when you know if you play another game, half your teams are going to lose with maybe bowls at stake? So it's the biggest reason college football needs a commissioner to decide stuff like this. It's also a reason it's never going to happen.
So the next question I have for you is still sticking on that national college football news story. And one of the things that I was most interested with over this offseason was that pay-for-play bill out of California. How big of a deal do you think that is going to be ultimately? And if not that, how do you ultimately see the NCAA pivoting or at least evolving to pay these athletes or at least give them their name, image, and likeness?
That's a mouthful. Let me grab the California question first, because it is a California question. There's a larger question to be answered about compensation. There's a larger discussion about the Yellowstone trial and name, image, and likeness. But specifically to California, the NCAA will only do something when they're forced to do something. And the bill in California looks like it's going to pass. The issue is that it won't be implemented until, I think, January of 2023. And the NCAA, or Mark Emmer specifically earlier this year, tried to bully California into saying, well, your players will be ineligible. There won't be championships there. And to that, I just chuckled, because I want to see the day that they don't play the Rose Bowl, that they tell the Pac-12 and Big Ten, don't bother. They've got this law in California. So if it does pass and it comes to pass, there will be some changes. And I said on the national landscape, I suspect that California bill, there's another one in North Carolina, will force the NCAA to do something. I've said this for years. It applies now. Players are already being paid. They're being paid to play. So if Mark Emmer wants to go down that boulevard, we can talk all day about it. Bowl gifts, cost of attendance, You can call it the full cost of attendance, but they're getting that money that they didn't get before because they're football players. And basketball players and what have you. So they're already being paid to play. They're already being compensated. The only issue we have to work through is, well, okay, how much? What are the semantics if the NCAA supposedly all worked up about pay for play when it's already happening? So it's a little bit hypocritical there. There's a student athlete representative in the SEC who I know well. His name's long snapper named Blake Ferguson. He told me in May, at the end of May, that he makes $12,000 a year with his cost of attendance, scholarship check, what have you. He's made so much money from legal ways of making money as an athlete. He's got a nice little nest egg saved up. You know, when he gets out into the real world, he's not going to be an NFL player. So where are we at on this thing? When these guys, and he's not the only one, but these guys are already doing this, and the end says, oh, no, it'll ruin amateurs. We can't do that. All we're talking about then is semantics. So let's all get together. Let's let the players forget about what it means for taxes, what it means for how much. Give them their name, image, and likeness that they get out of the womb, that you and I get out of the womb. We can become child stars. We can be on Dancing with the Stars. But NCAA, well, actually, that's another whole rabbit hole to go down under.
I don't know if I want to be on Dancing with the Stars, though.
No. Well, the female basketball player at Notre Dame was on Dancing with the Stars. And you would say, well, how is that even possible? That's, you know, they can't do that. They can't earn money for that. Can't accept expenses for that. The NCAA, with a straight face, said, nope, it's not because she hit two buzzer beaters in the Final Four to win the national championship for Notre Dame. It's because of her dancing skills. And we're supposed to believe that. So it's a little bit ridiculous right now.
So going from some off-the-field issues to starting to focus the things a little bit more on the field and specifically about the Big 12, how do you see the conference playing out? There seems to be kind of three tiers with Oklahoma, Texas, and I guess Iowa State up near the top, followed by TCU, Baylor, Oklahoma State, and then, you know, a collection of other schools, a lot of them with some new head coaches. How do you really see the Big 12 kind of playing out this year? And do you see it as a playoff conference, regardless of who the winner is?
I do. I think the Big 12 is at its best when Oklahoma and Texas are good together. And if you think about the history of the league since 96, that seldom happened in the league. It's happening now. They may be as good as they've been together since the old Mack Brown, Bob Stoops days at the turn of the century, or that whole decade during that. So they're good. I would suspect the winner of that championship game, unless they cannibalize each other, are going to be in the playoffs. Oklahoma's favorite. Texas certainly has a chance because they cleared the biggest hurdle they had to clear in with beating Oklahoma last year in the Cotton Bowl. There's nothing can do it. So I think that's one of the more fascinating storylines of 2019, because the Big 12 has done what I think every conference is going to start to look at, is matching their two best teams, especially in the playoff era, because you don't want what happened last year in the Big 10, where you've got an elite team like Ohio State playing an 8-4, I think at the time, I want to say 8-4, Northwestern. Well, you know, Ohio State didn't get to the playoff, but had they been situation where they could have gone, they were one loss, one upset away, 8-4 team of not going. So you want your two best teams playing. I'm getting away from the subject. I love Iowa State. I love Matt Campbell. I love Brock Purdy. This is a league where you start with the quarterback. If you got a quarterback, you got a chance. That's why Iowa State had a chance. Matt Campbell's a fantastic coach. You know, after that, I don't know. I don't think much of Alex Delton at TCU. TCU went and got him from Kansas State as a transfer. I really like Neil Brown at West Virginia and Austin Kendall. I've heard so much good about Austin Kendall when he was at Oklahoma. So I think they're in good shape, not to win the conference, but I think to be representative after the Dana Holgorsen era. And then, you know, Kansas bringing up the bottom, Kansas State with Chris Klieman, which I think with Skylar Thompson had significant quarterback issues, so I think they kind of just feel their way past the Bill Snyder era, and that kind of leaves the Texas Techs of the world. You know, what does that happen with Matt Wells? I think eventually that'll be very, very good. That team at Utah State was one of the most balanced in college football. The problem was he had three, I want to say, losing seasons or mediocre seasons before Utah State won 10 last year. He's a very good coach. That'll be a very solid program if he stays long enough.
So kind of along those lines, you started getting into it a little bit. You know, Cliff Kingsbury, air raid guy, gets fired from Texas Tech, goes to the NFL. Dana Holgorsen, another air raid guy, West Virginia to Houston. No matter what was going on in Lawrence, Kansas, David Beatty is another guy you could classify as kind of being in the air raid. How is losing those offensive styles in this league for this upcoming season, and maybe a shift from, you know, those air raid, open, wide open, pass, to something a little bit more balanced? Has that changed the perception of the league at all, or is it still going to be perceived as, you know, where offenses go to, you know, the laboratory, basically, where you start to grow things and, you know, see where the monster goes?
Yeah, I think that's a question to be answered during the season. Certainly Chris Klieman isn't that guy either at Kansas State. He's balanced to pro style. You know, you're right. There is a lot of air raid talent, or coaching talent, gone the other way. So will what Oklahoma and Texas are doing, you know, dictate what everybody else has to do, or is there a way to hold the ball, be more balanced, make those teams play from behind if they don't score when they're going tempo? We may see a regression to that. You just gave me a good story idea, because it was, for its history, it's just been a flat out gunslinger league. You know, will that change this year?
Right. And the guy who, honestly, I don't know if he's the guy who started it all, but Tom Herman changing Texas to a pro spread is what he likes to call it. Kind of one of the innovators there. But what is the national media's thoughts on Tom Herman, and what is his perception in the national media?
I think he's one of the top young coaches in the country, the way he's always been since he was at Ohio State in that run they made in 2014. He kind of backed up everything he said last year. Now they just have to take the next step and win the league. I mean, when you beat Oklahoma and physically dominate Georgia in the Senior Bowl, that's a pretty good, you know, leftover going into 2019. Now we're just waiting.
But Dennis, Georgia didn't want it.
Oh yeah, I'm sorry, I got the narrative wrong. I'm sorry. Whenever Alabama loses a major bowl game, they're distracted by agents and everybody checked out. Yeah, that's right.
Right.
Sorry about that.
No worries. Just had to correct you real fast.
Exactly. Texas had nothing to do with beating the poo out of them physically, but I think he's on track. I mean, I think everything's on track at Texas, and I think it could be one of those. You know, those are two places you don't leave. You know, Lincoln Riley, if he leaves, is going to the NFL. Same with Tom Herman, I would think. I don't know. Notre Dame, maybe. I don't know. But there's two places you don't leave. It's not a stepping stone. This could be another 10-year war, you know, Bo and Woody, where starting with last year, where you just track these epic games. And I think it will go back and forth. So, no, I think Tom Herman's got a great rep.
So kind of along those lines, his quarterback is, you know, being around him a lot, seeing him in media availabilities and things like that. Sam Ehlinger's wired pretty similarly to Tom Herman, but goes out on the field and after a very up and down and also injury riddled freshman year, comes out and puts together an efficient sophomore season and boosts himself into the national conversation as far as quarterbacks go. A lot of times right behind the Tua Tagovailoas and the Trevor Lawrences. What's kind of the perception on him this year after that sophomore season and where he could bring the Longhorns?
Yeah, a little bit of Baker Mayfield in him. I don't think I'm wrong saying that. I just hope that the way Texas runs the ball, which I think is not forcefully enough, that he doesn't take too much of that load on himself, which I thought he did last year, in the Texas credit and profit. But they just need to run the ball better. They've got backs. I don't want to say they don't run hard. They don't run efficient. You know, what I saw last year, that, you know, that is in a 10-win season. They've got to run the ball more forcefully, more physically in general. And I just hope that isn't on the back of Ehlinger. But he's in that Heisman conversation. It's a great story. You know, they've waited since Colt McCoy for this, and now they got this guy. We'll see how far he takes.
So, side note, I don't think Longhorn fans are going to be pretty happy about you calling Sam Ehlinger a Baker Mayfield type. But
I see it, though.
Well, no,
I do,
I
know where you're coming from.
His makeup. He's very confident of himself and the team at times. I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
But back to the Longhorns here, the national media and you, where do you guys see the Longhorns' ceiling and the floor? Where do you see it?
Well, I think the ceiling is a playoff team winning the Big 12. And the floor is third place. I think it'd be a tremendous disappointment if this team finished in third place. God forbid even thinking anything below that. You know, we say all this, but they've lost a lot of people. They've lost a lot of talent. And maybe we're just projecting that Texas has turned the corner. And like Ehlinger said in the Sugar Bowl, we're back. Texas is back. Now, I think a lot of us have drunk that Kool-Aid for better or worse. But for me, yeah, I think they're back. This year is, you know, anything below third in the Big 12, I think it's a big disappointment, and obviously they're shooting for a championship.
And that leads perfectly to what my next question was. You know, you mentioned losing starters, having to replace a lot of guys, and I mean, we've asked, like, what does the national media think a few times, and that's not to demonize it at all, but, you know, there's a different perception from, you know, if you visit maybe once or twice a season against a lot of the media yeah. around here that sees it, you know, day in and day out on the ground. And kind of the narrative that's built around Texas's defense is they have to, you know, replace eight starters. They're replacing Charles Omenihu, who went to the NFL. They're replacing yep. Gary Johnson and, you know, a few other, you know, eight starters. Looking at the story locally, those starters, let's say Chris Boyd, who's now on the Minnesota Vikings, he's being replaced by a guy in Jalen Green, who is the number one corner in the state a few years ago, arguably the number one player in the state, has locked down that one of those corner spots. Same thing with a guy like Taquan Graham, who no matter what Breckenhager did or how he looked or what, you know, sound bites he provided everybody, he was not the most efficient player right. at defensive end, whereas Taquan Graham's right. got 30 pounds on him. So I'm guessing where do you think the middle ground is between, you know, looking at the headline, Texas has to replace eight starters, and then also kind of looking a little deeper and seeing, you know, those Tom Herman recruiting classes with, you know, that uber talented defensive back class a couple of years ago. Those are the guys who are coming up and replacing them. I guess where's the middle ground between those two ideas?
Oh, gosh. Why is there air? I don't know. That's a huge question.
Right.
You remember that first recruit, and I think there were two top five recruiting classes, I want to say. Remember that first recruiting class where he called it a transition class?
Yeah.
I thought that was a slap in the face to the players he signed.
And every one of them has turned out to be pretty darn good. Right. Well, not the running backs, but.
Right. Yeah, you can think that, but don't say it. But you're right in what you said. They all turn out to be pretty good, which is the end game anyway. So, no, I think what they've got coming up, and you guys just mentioned it, will sustain them. They've kind of got it going now, and it's going to be fascinating to watch. I'll just keep coming back to what I said at the beginning. They know in their minds they can beat Oklahoma. And it might be easier now with Jalen Hurts, because I think that's one of the biggest storylines of the Big 12 season. Kind of curious he went there. You know, this guy lost his job at Alabama because of Tua, but also because he had begun short-arming the ball and was so coached into not turning it over that he didn't take obvious throws. When I saw him last year, when they absolutely needed him as a backup to beat Georgia in the SEC championship game, he looked like a completely different player. Now, if that's a hint of what he is at OU, and Lincoln Riley's the ultimate kingmaker at quarterback right now, then they're going to be pretty good. So it may come down to that. So I think these teams are as close as can be right now, and you look to, what is it, October? Is it 12th or 13th this year? I can't remember. It's going to be monumental.
I don't know. I don't know when it starts.
Second week of October.
Always.
Exactly. So, and this is the last question I got, and it kind of feeds off that. Since about, I guess, 2013, in the middle of the whole Mac Brown retirement, firing, yep. whatever you want to call it, and through the Charlie Strong era, and even through, I guess, the Maryland game last year in 2018, it seems like Texas, and not seems, it has been, Texas has been a very easy target. You go from, you know, 2014 getting beat down by Arkansas, 2015 getting shut out at Iowa State, losing to Kansas, losing to Maryland, and losing to Maryland again. I'm kind of wondering, do you think that, you know, is Texas the punching bag that people looked for? And you think a big reason why so many, you know, not just media members, but fans from all over the place, not only don't believe in Texas, but give them zero benefit of the doubt. And I'm kind of, I don't know if this is an apt comparison, but maybe to Clemson at the tail end of the last decade, where they were a verb. They were Clemsoning, you know, whenever Sweeney took over for Bowden in his first couple of years before he took off and put it on a roll we haven't seen, except at Alabama or even Georgia this decade. Do you think that Texas is about to be able to get rid of that punching bag status that so many people kind of wanted for them for a while? And is that going to finally move on to something at somebody else?
Is USC next?
Well, that's a good point. I think when you're a power and you don't win, you're an easy target. When you underachieve, you know, how many schools out there that are football factories haven't had a dip? I can't think of one. It used to be Penn State, and then they, you know, that 2011 with the Sandusky scandal took care of that. But they bounced back. USC's in a rough patch, but they had, you know, they were a mini dynasty in the decade before last. So, you know, you're not winning. You're an easy target. It's as easy as that. Is Texas a bigger target because it's, you know, it's elite in many ways? You know, the way it presents itself to the world, sure. You know, Matt Brown used to say the best thing about coaching Texas is we're the New York Yankees of college football. And the worst thing about coaching Texas is we're the New York Yankees of college football, because they're a huge target. But no bigger target, you know, perhaps than a USC, where, you know, you ask right now, how can they not be winning? Michigan, which is winning at a very high level, but not championships. But I do think in some form Texas is back. They just have to take that next step and win that championship.
Right. So thank you for answering the college football questions. Now here's the actual part you've been waiting for. Dennis and I, actually, this is how we got started talking, is he has the Blues logo on his Twitter. And so I realized, oh, wow, another college football guy who's a Blues fan? I can talk to him about this. So we started talking, and all of a sudden, you know, I was asking, hey, do you want to be on our show? So I have to ask you a few Blues questions.
Sure.
And the first one being, after the success of the season, how do I not ask this? Where were you when Pat Maroon put in the goal in double overtime? Because I feel like that might have been the best game of this past Stanley Cup playoff for the Blues.
Yeah, I was at home. I was watching it, trying not to wake my wife when he scored. I did, you know, I was going to say yesterday, I actually watched it again for the first time on the NHL Network, so I was, you know, I knew exactly what would happen. It was different. But I was at home. It, you know, maybe the biggest goal in the Blues' 52-year history. I actually covered Game 4. I was there for that, the 4-2 win.
Oh, wow.
For Game 7 against Boston, I was in Orlando, Florida. At the NACTA convention.
Oh.
At the NACTA convention, I was moderating the panel, but made sure I had time at night, and was just in my room because I knew I'd make an ass of myself if I was out in the lobby there or something. But let's see, I'm trying to, game two was actually in Destin, Florida, with a bunch of colleagues, at the SEC spring meetings. And when Gunnarsson scored the overtime goal, just, of course, made a fool of myself. So, guys like me, I tell people I can root for two things, the Cardinals and Blues. I'm not ashamed. Everything else is just, you know, something to be covered. So it's good.
I think watching Pat Maroon's goal go in, I first didn't believe it, but that's about as close to crying about a sports event as I have ever come. Because just, and it wasn't because of the emotions. It was the release of tension that I was feeling that entire game.
It was because they had so many of those happen to them over the years, to the point that you were just waiting, and a part of you, and I'm speaking for you.
Oh, of course.
Right now, as a Blues fan, even the Cubs of hockey, if I could,
right.
Over the years with the bad Cubs, that you knew something bad, you knew how it was going to end, you just didn't know how it was going to end badly.
Yeah, and it just wasn't, looking like it was going to happen because of Ben Bishop was just a Superman.
And if you remember, I just watched it again yesterday. Jamie Benn, a minute and a half before, the puck is halfway across the goal line on a wraparound. I still don't know how Bennington kept it out.
No, because he's a magician.
That was a possible game winner. It was great. So, yeah.
I finally believe that Jordan Bennington was an actual magician when he made that save in Game 7 with his toe. I remember specifically standing up and being like, that is magic.
Yeah.
That didn't happen. I cannot believe that just happened.
That was in the second period, not Marchand. I don't know. Yeah, maybe Marchand, but it was at that point when he stopped that. I think it was still 2-0 then. Yeah, it had to be. I think they're going to win it. You know, that puck goes in 9 times out of 10 for anybody. But he had stretched across and got that with his toe. So it's great. Look, I'll tell everybody to look on my appearances on CBS Sports HQ. It's our streaming channel. Whenever I'm on, I have a backdrop. And my left shoulder is a mini Stanley Cup, so I'm representing.
Nice. And my last question is, as a lifelong Blues fan and, you know, also a St. Louis fan, what is your most vivid St. Louis Blues memory aside from the Stanley Cup? What is it that defined you as a Blues fan before this?
I'll give you 2 of them. I was 13 years old in 1972 when Kevin O'Shea beat the North Stars in Game 7 of the first round series, and then they just got the floor wiped by the Bruins in the second round. But that was right when I was getting into the game. And then in 81, they had one of those weird, everyone used to play best 2 out of 3 in the first round.
Mm-hmm.
They had the best record in the league in 81 and went to triple overtime in Game 3 against the Penguins. And Mike Crombean, an old-time Blue, scored an overtime to win it. And again, they lost in 6 to the Rangers in the next round. But it was just that's what it means to be a Blues fan. Incredible highs and mostly lows. But now, last year, the calendar year, I said, I may not live to see him win a Stanley Cup. And little did I know would happen a year later.
I literally told my uncle that. I said, you know, even I'm 25. I was like, I don't know if I'm ever going to see this after the hand pass goal against the Sharks.
Yeah, that was it. That was it. It's like, well, you're waiting for that Cubs moment. There it is. There's
exactly.
No way they'll recover.
Exactly. But hey, Dennis, thank you so much for hanging out with us. Can you tell us where we can find you and find your stuff?
Real easy. On Twitter at Dennis.CBS. And then every day during college football season, probably in some form, CBSSports.com.
Thank you again, Dennis. It was a pleasure talking to you.
All right, guys. Thank you.
So thank you to Dennis Dodds for coming on with us. Awesome to talk to Blues with anybody because there's not a lot of hockey talk around here in Austin or in Texas in general. But we do have some news. We earned a sponsorship with LastStandHats.com. Y'all have seen LastStandHats.com. If you are a Longhorn fan on the internet anywhere, they are the number one place for real Texas fans to get their game day gear. And now if you use the code HornsCast10 on LastStandHats.com, you will get 10% off any item on the site. So go ahead and wear your heart on your head and go get a Last Stand hat today. So now let's go ahead and get into the Louisiana Tech game with Corey Diaz, who covers Louisiana Tech for the Monroe News Star and Shreveport Times. Corey, how are you doing? You ready for football season?
Guys, thank you so much for having me. I'm doing very well, and I'm excited to get to Saturday night and spend a little time in Austin, Texas, and check out a football game, too.
It's going to be a nice part of your job getting to Austin, but let's start off with taking a look at Louisiana Tech. What are the main storylines for Louisiana Tech headed into the 2019 season?
Sure. We'll start offensively. They've got 3 of their interior linemen up front back. They've got a ton of starts between those 3 and junior center Cody Russey, right guard Ethan Reed, and left guard Drew Kirkpatrick, 3 seniors there in the middle. But coming in the fall camp and really even dating back to spring, it was, you know, who was going to take over those 2 tackle positions up front. You know, obviously 2 key positions in terms of, you know, run blocking and pass protecting. So it looks like an LSU transfer by the name of Willie Allen has assumed that role at left tackle there. And at the right tackle spot, a guy by the name of Dwight Stallworth, who's their biggest offensive lineman. He's 6'9", a little over 300 pounds. So you're not going to miss him on the football field at all. Another storyline offensively was the running back position and really sort of trying to build some consistency in terms of production. Last year was the first year in 4 years that that Tech didn't have a 1,000-yard rusher. Some of that was due to health, but Skip kind of said all throughout last season that we needed to get more out of that position, not only running the ball, but also, you know, in pass blocking too. And you know, Israel Tucker is a guy that played some last year. He also missed a few games, you know, with a hand injury. He's back and fully healthy this year. He's going to be that guy that's going to get the first carry on Saturday night. And then when you look at the defense side of the ball, I think the biggest question mark for this team was there's no more Jalen Ferguson. You got to replace the NCAA all-time leading sack guy. And, you know, there's going to be a lot of experience up front for Tech on the defensive line. They're going to have three new starters up there because they graduated all four of their starters from last year. Got a couple of guys that have been in the program for a long time, but they just don't really have a whole lot of snaps. So I think the coaching staff is really intrigued to especially throwing them into the fire there against Texas in week one here. I think they're really intrigued to see how they're going to handle, you know, the adversity and how they respond in the middle of the game to certain situations and just see what kind of production that they can get out of them.
Obviously, these teams have never played each other, first matchup ever all time. And, you know, I think a lot of people look out east and see the last name Holtz and, you know, all they know is, oh, that's Lou's son. So for people who may not be familiar with Louisiana Tech, a team that's obviously done really well in these past few years, winning bowl games, what kind of is the identity of a team run by Skip Holtz at Louisiana Tech?
Yeah, sure. You know, in that Holtz family coaching tree, you know, they kind of have an offensive mind. So, and that's obviously what Skip has brought to the Louisiana Tech program since taking over 7 years ago. You can kind of go back and look at the stats. They were putting up, you know, high 30s, low 40s points per game 3 or 4 years ago. And that's kind of the identity of this program schematic wise. They like to spread you out. They like to have defenses, you know, have to adjust and try to hit assignments from sideline to sideline, and very much predicated on getting, you know, really highly touted receivers in, really productive guys that can go out there and make plays. And, you know, that's kind of just been the calling card for Louisiana Tech since Skip has taken over. And, you know, you kind of mentioned it there. They're one of two, you know, FBS programs that have won 5 straight bowl games. And I think it's Louisiana Tech and Wisconsin from the Big Ten. That's the only two teams that have done that in the last 5 years. So, lots of success, you know, competing Conference USA, and coming into this year, they were selected to finish third in their division, which was a little bit of a surprise. I think a lot of people coming in thought that they'd be right behind North Texas there in the West Division. I think when you specifically look at this year's team, they kind of have, they're wearing a little bit of an underdog name tag on them, which is kind of the first time that they've done that in a little while. And I'm personally interested to see kind of how the guys were to rally around that and embrace that new sort of different role with this team. So I think that kind of looks at, you know, kind of what Skip has done in his 7 years at Louisiana Tech, and kind of a little bit how this year's team may be a little different than years past, and how they might try to navigate this year with some, you know, not a whole lot of expectation.
You're saying Skip Holtz is more of an offensive mind. He brought in new defensive coordinator Bob Diaco, who was in Oklahoma last year. What are his defenses looking like so far at Louisiana Tech?
Yeah, you know, it's very different, you know, for the guys on the defensive side of the ball.
In a good way or a bad way?
No, I mean, I think it's been good. And I guess hopefully not to spend a whole lot of time, but I'll kind of get into a little bit. But, you know, the last couple of years, Blake Baker, who's now the DC at Miami, had been the defensive coordinator at Louisiana Tech. And Blake based out of a 4-3, and obviously a big reason to do that because you had a guy like Jalen Ferguson at one of your rush end spots. And so this year, you know, Bob comes in, you know, right before spring practice, and the guys go through spring with Bob, and he's going to be basing out of a 3-4. And I think with the personnel that Tech's got, you know, obviously with the inexperience up front on the defensive line, what that kind of does is that allows Bob to get more guys on the field that have gotten more snaps and have more experience in this defense. And, you know, guys like a Willie Baker, who played behind Jalen Ferguson at the rush in last year, is actually going to move out to more of a jack, you know, linebacker hybrid position. Sometimes he's going to line up 4 yards off the line of scrimmage. Sometimes he's going to be on the line in a four down tech. So guy with his type of talent, his ability to rush the passer, you know, it's kind of a good thing to disguise whether or not Willie's going to come at you on a 1st and 10, or whether he's going to kind of drop back and maybe help in coverage. And so from all the defensive guys that I've talked to, and I'm pretty sure at some point this fall camp, I've talked to all 11 of them that are going to start. they're really excited and happy with Bob Diaco and the direction that he's taken this defense. And now it's just a matter of, you know, all the work that you've put in, you know, now you got to go out and you got to execute on Saturday night. And so, you know, I think that's something that these guys are looking forward to and seeing how things are going to turn out with, for them and a new scheme.
So staying on that side of the ball, and this is kind of in reference to what you wrote today. There was a pretty nice quote that came out from the availability with Snead, I believe is his last name, Jay Snead. He's a part of the Louisiana Tech secondary. Is that the strength of this team? It looks like there's a lot of experience back there, with the exception of B.J. Williamson. Is that where Bob Diaco is really going to rely on his defense to try and make plays?
Absolutely. You know, and let me say here, I'm a little disappointed in you guys that we didn't lead off with this, because the internet just went absolutely crazy today. But no, absolutely. The secondary in Louisiana Tech's defense is far and away their strength. You know, you're looking at a combined 73 starts there when you also factor in a senior safety by the name of Darrell Lewis, who's not going to start on Saturday night. But Skip alluded to it earlier today during his availability that, yeah, you know, a redshirt freshman by the name of B.J. Williamson is going to start at that other safety spot opposite of Lajarius Snead. But Darrell is definitely going to play on Saturday night. It's a guy that he's got the most starts back there in that secondary, and he's a guy he's a leader on the team, and he's definitely going to be counted on, you know, in big moments. And collectively, 73 career starts. You know, you've got Amik Robertson, who I saw a lot of Tech fans, they just saw the height and they say, wait, 5'9", like there's no way. But I will say that this is a kid that came in and earned a starting spot at cornerback as a true freshman, and his second collegiate game was against Mississippi State. And I think he may have allowed maybe two good plays against the Mississippi State squad, and the rest of the game it was kind of how he kind of shut him down. And he also intercepted a ball that game and almost returned it back for a touchdown. I mean, this kid is a rare talent, and it makes him even more rare of a talent considering his size. I don't want to say that Tech's going to shut down Colin Johnson or anybody like that, but I do think a lot of people may overlook Amik Robertson because of his size and maybe what school he plays for. But this is a guy that I honestly believe that come to the end of the year, he's going to have to sit down and have a serious discussion with his family and his coaches as whether or not he may have to leave early for the NFL draft or might come back for his senior year. This kid is that good.
So you talked about why Amik Robertson is so special, even at 5'9", but where is this team liable? What is the Achilles heel of this team on both sides of the ball?
You know, offensively, it's in the run game. Even after the second fall scrimmage this year during this fall camp, Skip was still talking about how he needed more production out of the run game. And last year, that was when he would make those statements, it was more directed toward the offensive line. The offensive line weren't really doing their keys and weren't really hitting their assignments. But this year, it's been more about we need to get more production out of the running backs. One quote that's always stuck with me since he said it a couple of weeks ago is we don't need to just get the yards that are blocked for. We need to get more after that. And so Tech's definitely going to have some form of a consistent run game Saturday night against Texas to be a consistent offense, because if Texas makes you one-dimensional, I think that obviously plays into their hands. That's going to make for a long night for Louisiana Tech offensively. So, and then defensively, you know, in years past, it's kind of been, you know, the pass defense. But over the last couple of years, they've incredibly improved defending the pass. Last year, they were the 29th best pass defense in the country. And you get all of those guys back. And this year, it's going to be, can we rush the passer? Can we get guys that can get pressure on opposing quarterbacks so they just don't stand back there in the pocket, just slice us up for 300-400 yards? And so those are the two spots on both sides of the ball that I think, you know, if they can get better production out of those two particular groups as the year goes along, I think this is a Tech team that maybe coming in, I think has a legitimate shot to win 8 games. And if they can get better production out of those, I mean, you're looking at maybe a 9-win team that can legitimately compete for a Conference USA championship.
So kind of back on the offensive side of the ball, with, you know, talents like Adrian Hardy and then a skilled quarterback with Jamar Smith, obviously those are guys that you use to make a lot of the plays. But I guess, how do they line up? Is it a spread, you know, real pass happy air raid type offensive system? Well, will we see some old school formation stuff? Kind of, you talked a little bit about how the Holtzes are an offensive family. What does that philosophy look like on the field?
You know, I think 80% of the time it's going to be 3-4 wide. They do have an H-back that they use, especially in short down and distance situations or goal line situations. A senior by the name of Bobby Holly is a really big kid. And he's not only can he block in the run game, but he also has the ability to sort of sneak out of the backfield and catch a ball in the flat and turn it up and pick up some yardage that way. But yeah, I mean, it's mostly a spread attack, but they do incorporate some of that H-back / fullback type formations. You know, last year they had a guy by the name of Cam McKnight, graduated, but I think he ended up finishing like third on the team in reception touchdowns. That's because they'd get to the 3-yard line and they'd line up in a kind of a jumbo package with him, and they would leak him out of the backfield and hit him in the flat, and he would just score. So yeah, I mean, you'll kind of see a little bit of everything, but for the most part, as you alluded to, when you've got talents like Adrian Hardy outside, who's a former Oklahoma wide receiver, you've got a former TCU wide receiver by the name of Isaiah Graham that's going to be on the other side of him. So these guys are really good talent. This is a group that Holtz has said before during fall camps, probably the most talented outside receiver room that's been at Tech since he's been there. So you definitely want to utilize that talent and those guys as much as you can. I'm not sure how much Texas will see of a more ground and pound type tack, especially with the run game being as inconsistent as it's been. I wouldn't be surprised if Jamar has 40 pass attempts on Saturday night.
So Louisiana Tech is really an explosive offense, right? And as you said, it's thanks to the guys on the outside. Since Longhorn fans haven't seen Adrian Hardy, what should they expect? What makes him so productive?
You know, he's really special. You know, he's a guy that's got the ability to high point the ball. He's really crisp in his route running. He's got a really quick first step off the line. And he kind of looks like, even in his pads, he kind of looks like he's a little thin. But, you know, one thing that's always kind of surprised me about him is his strength. He can take getting jammed at the line and he can fight out of that, and then he can get back into his route pretty quickly. And obviously once he gets the corner behind him, the safeties are in trouble, because this is a kid that, and he's also very dynamic with the ball in his hand. So yards after the catch are really big for him too. So just watching, one of the first few times I ever watched him in practice, I remember thinking to myself, oh, okay, so this is why he had the opportunity to sign with Oklahoma out of high school. He's that good. And I mentioned Isaiah Graham earlier. You know, he's another guy that kind of fits into that same mold. So I'm really interested to see that tandem against a much bigger school with good athletes, and see how they sort of respond to some of the things that they'll run into against Texas.
Well, Adrian Hardy already has enough hate for the Longhorns to get through this game, being a former Sooner.
That rivalry, as we all know, bleeds very deep and it runs very deep. I think Adrian is probably almost as excited about this game as all the kids, you know, from the state of Texas that are on Louisiana Tech's roster.
So my last question, I guess, about individual guys is, you know, Jamar Smith entering his, fourth straight year starting. The game notes mentioned he's the only quarterback in the nation to be starting for his fourth consecutive season opener. I guess, what are the expectations for him? This is his senior year. He's thought to be, you know, the guy who can lead this offense. What are the expectations for him, and what do you think he'll be able to do against the Longhorns?
Well, obviously, you know, with the just sheer amount of experience that he has at this point in his career, you know, I think the expectations for him are the highest that they've ever been. And that's something that the last couple of years, I think a lot of the Louisiana Tech fan base has felt like he hasn't really lived up to those. And a lot of that kind of stemmed from his very first collegiate start. He was a redshirt freshman, and they opened up the year against Arkansas on the road in Fayetteville. And he goes down there and it's a 21-20 game, and he's got them driving, and he's putting them in a position to win the game. And then he has a boneheaded mistake there near the end and throws an interception. But that kind of just bred this, wow, what do we have here? You know, he was a backup quarterback at the time, and the starting quarterback, Ryan Higgins, had to sit that game out. I believe it was due to an injury. So he comes in and everyone's like, wow, what do we have in a backup quarterback? I mean, when we get this guy ready to start for us, he's going to be special. And hasn't really lived up to that since. They've played South Carolina on the road, and it was a one-point game there, and he had an opportunity to lead the team to a win there and threw another pick with less than a minute and a half to go in the game. And so he kind of talked about that earlier today. His availability with the media was remembering those mistakes and those crunch times against teams that you could have the potential to upset on the road, and really learning from those mistakes. And you can say that to your blue in the face, but now you got to go out in the field and you got to prove these sorts of things and that you've learned these lessons. And I think another thing that's really helped him is over the offseason, you know, he spent that 3 or 4 days at the Manning Passing Academy, and he got to spend time with a lot of the really great quarterbacks, you know, in college football, and not only them, but also the Mannings. And he really learned how to break down film and watch film and how to prepare more off the field so that you're better prepared once you step onto the field. And he's had a really good fall camp. He's had his most accurate fall camp since he's been at Louisiana Tech. And I think the coaches are now ready to see the Jamar that they've expected to see for the last couple of years. And against Texas on Saturday night, kind of how they opened up the game against down in Baton Rouge against LSU last year, what they'll want to do is they'll want to get Jamar Smith in a rhythm early. I think they're going to call a lot of quick passes, get the ball out of his hands as quick as possible, you know, get some timing down with Adrian Hardy, with Isaiah Graham, Griffin Hebert in the slot there. These guys, the receivers outside, get them in a little bit of a rhythm together. And then if you can get a couple of first downs on that first drive of the game, you know, I think everybody just kind of takes that big, long exhale and say, okay, wait a minute. We're in Texas and we're playing against the top 10 team right now, but this is just football and we can do this. I expect that, but to say I think he'll throw for 300 yards, I don't know. I just honestly don't know. But I am excited to see him match up with that Texas defense, because he has proven in the past that, you know, these Power 5 schools don't really rattle him too much. And so I'm interested to see kind of what he's learned over the years and if he can finally make that big play or two to get his team over the hump.
So not asking specifically for prediction, but if you'd like to give one, go right ahead. But I guess, and you touched on this a little bit, what do you really expect from this game? Because last year, Louisiana Tech played two Power 5, two SEC schools. One, like you mentioned, kept it close at LSU. One at Mississippi State, not particularly close. So you're expecting to see a close game, or beat the doors off from the beginning, or keep it close but see Texas pull away, or the opposite? What do you think you're going to see when you make it to Austin on Saturday?
Well, you know, I guess maybe if you'd asked me that question yesterday, I'd probably say it might be close at halftime. But the closer we get to this game, I really feel like, you know, I don't know. Obviously, I hadn't spent any time around the Texas football program, but just from an outsider's perspective, I mean, it just kind of seems like this Texas team just kind of has a different bravado and different attitude about it. I kind of feel like Texas is just going to come out, and I think they're just going to say, hey, you know, this is our house. You know, we're coming out here. This is strictly business. And I honestly wouldn't be surprised if it's a 21-point game, you know, at the half. And, I think pretty much Texas is probably going to roll. And, I haven't seen a point spread. I probably should look that up, but yeah, I think Texas probably rolls here. I mean, Tech will score some points. I could see them scoring a couple touchdowns, two or three touchdowns, but, you know, I could see Texas winning by at least three touchdowns.
So how do you expect Louisiana Tech to attack Texas when they get to Austin? What are they going to be keying on, and what are the specialties that they're going to be using to attack the Longhorns?
Yeah, sure. And I think I mentioned it before, you know, offensively, I think, you know, early on, it's going to be a lot of dinks and dunks. You know, and again, that's just to get Jamar and the receivers, you know, in a rhythm and timing together. With right now, you know, Holtz and offense coordinator Todd Fitch, they're not really sure what they would get out of the run game at this point. So I think your plan A on offense is to go through Jamar and his arm and the receivers. And I think defensively, when you've got a talent like Texas has and quarterback Sam Ehlinger, you have to start with him. They'll play contain on him. They do not, and they've mentioned this earlier today in their availability, they don't want Sam getting out of the pocket. They want to keep Sam inside the pocket for as long as they can. And the secondary, you know, honestly, very confident, of course, as we've heard, they feel like they can play that coverage to, you know, to give their defensive lineman and maybe a linebacker or two that may be rushing, give them time to maybe get back there and sort of pressure Sam a little bit and get him kind of get him rattled a little bit and maybe off his game and with the timing and rhythm with his receivers too. So I think that's going to be the game plan for Tech into this. Keep Sam in the pocket from their defensive side, and then offensively kind of let Jamar get into a flow of a game there early on, and then a couple minutes into it, a couple quarters into it, just kind of look up and see where you are, and then obviously you can adjust from there.
So last question we got, maybe the most important question, and I know it was kind of a delayed reaction from the Texas side, I believe, because it took a while, I think like a month before the CBS station in Austin found that clip, but how was the whole Louisiana Tech perspective from Terry Bradshaw talking about Texas's 5A quarterbacks that apparently weren't very good and that didn't really stand a chance against the Bulldogs? How did that go over in Ruston and with the Louisiana Tech community? And what was that whole situation from your perspective like?
There were a lot of raised eyebrows. I can tell you it was not an expected comment that was supposed to come. You know, what was funny about it is that, you know, Terry, you know, obviously Louisiana Tech alum, and he comes back and he's speaking at the athletic stole ceremony where all the student athletes that are graduating, you know, they get their stole on their cap and gown and whatnot. And it's supposed to be a very joyous occasion. And he gets up there and, you know, it says, doesn't think Sam Ellinger's very good. And we've obviously talked with Skip a few times after that whole situation. And he said, kind of wish Terry Bradshaw wouldn't have said that. You know, it's not like Texas needs any bulletin board material to play Louisiana Tech. And so, obviously with anything, you know, as time goes by, kids are kids these days. They probably have already forgotten about that. But, from here in the Ruston community and Louisiana Tech fan base, I think it caught pretty much everybody off guard. And it was, I don't know, it was a very strange situation. But now that we're basically here at college football season, we're about to kick this thing off. I think everybody's just like ready to watch their team, you know, snap up their chin straps and actually play a different team that's wearing a different color. And we'll let sleeping dogs lie and let bygones be bygones at this point.
The Terry Bradshaw stuff is no longer bulletin board material, but you certainly gave the Longhorns some with your latest article. Thank you so much for coming on the show with us. Do you mind telling us where we can find you?
Yeah, absolutely. Any and everybody, all Texas fans, can feel free to follow me on Twitter, and that's at Corey Diaz underscore TNS, and that's CoryDiaz_TNS. I'm also on Facebook. I got a Facebook page. You can just search for Corey Diaz, you know, / the new star, pop up on there too. And obviously you can find all of our stuff at our website at thenewstar.com and Shreveport Times as well. I very much enjoyed all of the banter today, with the Texas fans and some Louisiana Tech fans chiming in. So, I think I'm even more looking forward to this game on Saturday just to kind of see what the internet's going to do throughout the course of the game.
Well, we look forward to having you down here. Again, thank you for coming on the show. It's awesome to talk to you, and everybody should go follow him. He does great work. Again, thank you.
Appreciate you guys.
Again, thank you to Corey Diaz for coming on the show. Nice guy. So, Joe, now that we've got Louisiana Tech's view on this game, what's your prediction and some quick thoughts on what you expect out of this game for the Longhorns and for Louisiana Tech?
Yeah, I think what you're going to see is an offense, at least from Louisiana Tech, that looks a lot like what Texas sees on a week in and week out basis in the conference. I don't know if it's got the talent top to bottom like, say, even an Oklahoma State does. Definitely not like an Oklahoma, despite Adrian Hardy and his lineage, but you know, this is going to be a team that wants to spread and pass and, you know, go up tempo sometimes. You heard him talk about some of the struggles they may have running the ball a little bit. So I think you're going to see a lot of passing. And I think that kind of fits into what Texas wants to be on defense and funnel things to their defensive backs. The linebacking core is not a strength of the team right now, but the defensive back, specifically the safeties, are. So I think that kind of plays into Texas' hands. It'll be a good, maybe not dress rehearsal because this one actually counts, but it'll be a good taste of, you know, what you might see later on in the year with some of these spread passing attacks and with the defense. So
I think that there's a lot of just general fan apprehension right now. I think you kind of heard me talk about that a little bit with Dennis, and that A, Texas fans know that Tom Herman has lost back-to-back home openers and or season openers.
Against teams he should have beat, which is what Louisiana
right.
Tech is.
Exactly. And, you know, talent-wise, you'd think Louisiana Tech is not up to Maryland standard. They're going on the road. This shouldn't happen. Lightning shouldn't strike thrice, I think is basically what I'm saying. And I don't think it will. At least you're not like LSU and playing an option team week one. You're playing something a little bit more conventional that you know. So I understand why there's apprehension. It makes a little bit of sense, but, you know, just going piece by piece about it, I don't think there's much reason for apprehension. Do I think Texas will cover? I don't know about that. 20 is a lot in any game. But do I think Texas will win? Yeah, I think this one should. It shouldn't be in doubt in the fourth quarter, in my opinion.
Like most everything, you and I are on the same page here. I don't think the Longhorns cover here. I'm expecting like a 14-point win. I feel like that would be a good win for the Longhorns if that was to go down. Maybe something like 35-21 would feel pretty good. But, yeah, I agree with you. They are an explosive team. We've kind of talked about them last week. The guys are going to be a good test for the young corners. The secondary is going to be a good test for Sam Ehlinger. And how I expect the Longhorns to really attack Louisiana Tech is to, as you said, funnel everything out. We know where Louisiana Tech is going to go. I mean, Corey just talked about it. They're going to the outside. They're going to be passing. So getting guys like Caden Stearns and Brandon Jones more towards the boundaries and daring, hey, Louisiana Tech, run on us. Go ahead and try and see if they can do that. If they can, then, hey, go back to what you're normally going to do, which is more a more balanced attack against the run and a pass for your defense. Otherwise, you've got them right where you want them. All right, so Joe, to end things off here, you got a score prediction for me?
Ooh, see the thing, I don't even know if I've put my whole season prediction in yet. But for this game, what did I say? Maybe not cover. So let me, let's go 40, what was it, 20 and a half? Maybe 21 on some books, 22 elsewhere if you're buying points.
Somewhere around there, yeah.
Let's go, 45-24. Some people will cover, some people won't. I know that a little bit contradicts what I said earlier, but 45-21, football math checks out. That's six scores for Texas. I think that's reasonable, especially if some of them are based off of explosive plays instead of extended drives like they were last year. I think Texas can go on extended drives against this team, but I think they're going to find ways to, you know, where they won't have to do that and have some more three-play scoring drives instead of eight-play scoring drives.
So I'm a little disagree with you. I don't think they're going to cover. I think they're going to win. I think they're going to be, it's going to be comfortable for them, but I think it's going to be by 14 points, as I said, 35-21 or 38-24, something along those lines. Maybe get the 17 points. I'm not expecting 21 points. I don't think Texas, as you said, as you're expecting, is as explosive. Maybe it's going to be different this year. Maybe they'll blow the doors off of Louisiana Tech, and I'll look like a fool, and it'll look good going to Louisiana State. But I'm not expecting that from a Tom Herman team, which is a little bit more methodical than they are explosive. We'll see. It's going to be interesting. It's going to be fun to see the Longhorns take the field. I'm sure they're going to be ready to hit somebody who's not in burnt orange, and it's football season, Joe. It's football season. We've made it. It's taken how long? 200 and something days, but we are
too
finally
long.
Here.
I'm ready for it. I've been ready for it.
I think it's actually 233 days it's been. 234 now, but we've made it. All right, that has been your 4th and 5, your Longhorn Nation podcast. I have been your host, Will Baizer. You guys can find me on Twitter at WILLBAIZER or Texas.TheFootballBrainiacs.com. Joe Cook, my man, where can we find you?
You can find me on Twitter at JosephCook89, or you can find me on InsideTexas.com.
Well, you guys can find both of us and our other shows on the Hornscast channel. That's the Hornscast channel on iTunes, Podbean, Spotify, Google Play. Anywhere you guys can find a podcast, you will find the Hornscast. On that note, thank you all for listening, and we will see y'all next week. Hook 'em.